There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you all along for another couple hours of live local talk. And remember, you are part of the show on the text line at 343-0106. I guess I should say 251-343-0106. Same works on a phone call. And if you have the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app, you can always leave us that voice message by using the microphone icon there on the front page where you're streaming the station. If you look down there at the bottom, there's a microphone icon. If you'll press that, you record us a message and emails it to us, and we play it back here on the air. So use that feature. We'll talk more about the FM Talk 106.5 app in just a little bit. And, you know, listening to the news cycle today and yesterday, it's been a lot of stories of celebrities passing. It seems to be a lot of them here in the last 48 hours. The one that had a little mention nationally, but I think should have a lot of mention here locally, is the passing of Ed Wilson, E.O. Wilson. A man who began like myself and many of us that end up being interested in the nature around us as kids, you know, catching critters out there in nets. I used to put the things in buckets and bring them back to the house, and then aquariums and all those things. The difference is he went on to be the father of biodiversity. Two Pulitzer Prizes, books on human nature and the ants, recognized as one of the most important scientists and influential people in the world when it came to the idea of biodiversity. This man received more than 150 prestigious awards and medals around the world, honorary member of more than 30 world-renowned and prestigious organizations, academies, and institutions. Several animal species named scientifically in his honor. Now, mostly those were ants, and we'll get into that in our discussion about E.O. Wilson and ants, as well as a bird and bat species, and guy that was named Darwin's heir. Pretty heady stuff. And let me talk about that. I consider this man part of that same lineage as you pass it on down. My friend and host of Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast, Bill Finch, joining us now on Midday Mobile. Good to talk to you, Bill.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, man. The passing of E.O. Wilson. You know, while I was familiar with the idea of E.O. Wilson and why the name should be important to somebody who is a proud Mobilian, it wasn't until I read the foreword, to tell you this, it wasn't until I read the foreword of your book, The Longleaf As Far As the Eye Can See, that I got a real sense of who the man was. So talk to me about meeting. How did you meet E.O. Wilson? How'd that happen?
Well, it's an interesting story. I was sitting at my desk. I used to work for this thing called a newspaper. We had him at one time. And I was environmental editor. I'd written a story on the forests of Alabama. Big series. Cut a lot of trees down to publish it. And we were looking at, we're looking at what's the future of these forests, and how do we do it better? And he was, so I'd written it, getting some calls from people. I was also writing a garden column at the time, and people would call me, and, you know, they'd ask tomato questions.
Yeah.
And so I got this call one day from this guy, and I thought, yeah, what kind of tomato question is this? And he says, Bill, this is Ed Wilson. And I said, and I sort of waiting for the tomato question. And then, thankfully, he said, E.O. Wilson. And I thought, oh.
This is no tomato question.
I'm glad I was nice to this guy. It began a conversation that we had lasted for a long time.
So, I mean, you just picked up the phone, and what's he calling you about? Is he calling you about the forest series? Had he seen that? Hey, Bill? I guess we've lost Bill. All right, tell you what, we'll get Bill back on. If y'all in the, he's gonna, we'll bring him through the other way. If y'all watch in the room back there, screening room, y'all good to go. Unless he's back with us now. No, he's not. So we're waiting for him to. There he is, right there. So let's see if we can get him through here. All right, there we go. Bill, do we have you? Do we have you, Bill? So it's going to be, knew it would be challenging. All right, Bill, do we have you?
Technology, John, technology.
Yeah, well, the technology usually works great, but we'll go old-fashioned with this. So I'm saying, what did he call you about in that, for when you thought it was a tomato call? What did Ed Wilson?
He's called to say, I love this story on the forest of Alabama. And he said, you know, I'm from Alabama. I said, yes, sir, I heard that. And he said, let's talk. That was back in 90, oh my goodness, 95, 96, 97, somewhere in there. And so we began a conversation about Alabama and why it's particularly important, not because he was born there, here, not because I was born here. I was born far, far away in Mississippi. But because we realized, you know, Alabama is important not because of us, but because it's important to the world. And this is this great conversation that we had, and it grew and grew, and we continued to work at it. And he said, you know, I was growing up in Mobile. Let me tell you about it. I'll tell the folks out there about it in case they don't know this. Ed, when Ed grew up, he was known as Snake. Everybody called him Snake because he was so good at capturing snakes as a kid. I mean, he just spent all his time in the woods running around outside Mobile. He had a family was from Mobile. They had a place in Mobile. He moved around Alabama a lot. Born in Birmingham. Lived in Pensacola, I think, for a while. Lived over, went to school over in Pass Christian. Graduated in Decatur, was in Bruton for a long while. But he spent most of his life around Mobile and went in the swamps catching things, loving things. He was fishing one day as a young kid, loved to fish, pulled a fish out of the water. I think it was over on the Perdido River.
I think it was a pinfish, wasn't it?
Well, it was, I can't remember what kind of fish it was, but it pinned him in the eye for sure.
So what does he do then? This, y'all listen to what Bill's about. What's he do then? He's got a pinfish or a fish spine in his eye. So what's he do?
Yeah, well, I think he pulls it out. I don't remember
and
the whole
keeps
story.
Fishing. You may remember more than, and he keeps fishing. When I read that story, he keeps fishing.
Right. Yeah, fishing.
And I said, there's a kindred soul.
Yeah, that's right. So he, but it damaged his eye in a really serious way. So he never had full sight in that eye. And it limited his ability to perceive depths, I think, and other things. It limited his ability to see it in a distance. He had already gotten really interested in nature, and he was interested in, you know, everything. It continued to capture snakes, which I think is a really dangerous thing when you don't see distances that well. But he increasingly realized that he had an incredible aptitude for seeing small things. And he got really interested in ants. And as it turns out, there was another big thing happening in Mobile. It's pretty consequential. There was this ominous invasion of ants. Back in the 40s in the port.
New ants. New ants coming to town.
New ant. And, you know, people kind of had a sense that something bad was about to happen, that bad was happening, and this ant was spreading. So everybody said, well, there's this little boy down in Mobile. He's a teenager still. Let's get him to collect this ant. And so he did. And he was the first person to describe the fire ant that was invading Alabama. And sort of made his name that way. We know a good bit more about that fire ant now. We know that there were actually two species, and Ed was the first person, I think, to confirm that, that invaded, and the later species took over in South Alabama, and the first species still exists in North Alabama. I'm not sure a lot of people realize that. But so he developed a reputation and then went on to Alabama, University of Alabama, which he loved dearly all his life. And then, as he said, you know, I had to go up north to find work.
And that took him that how
work,
far north?
That work was at Harvard. And he became the eminent evolutionary biologist. And I say this, and this will offend people more than anything else I could possibly say, but I'm going to be offensive about it. You could mention the name of an Alabama coach over most of the world, and they'd say, "What? Who are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
What are you? What? You mentioned Ed's name. You mentioned E.O. Wilson, and they just stand in awe. Ed is probably the best-known Alabamian of his generation.
State, he's the best-known of his generation. Inside the state, not so much.
Yes, but inside the state, probably not as much. And, you know, it's our loss that we don't recognize that. And it's probably a pretty severe loss, and we should talk about that more and more, because I think Ed recognized that that our way, the future of Alabama, could benefit from his relationship with Alabama and his introduction to Alabama, when he understood it was the biodiversity of Alabama, it was each of those little species that make this exceptional biodiversity of Alabama that made Ed one of the most famous people in the world and also one of the most respected. He also thought, you know, that could make Alabama famous. It could make Alabama respected. It could make life in Alabama better if we understood that Alabama was one of the world's great centers of biodiversity.
Yeah,
that's the discussion Ed and I had off and on over decades.
Was it like academic, or was it two guys talking excited about that? I mean, how was your relationship? I mean, how was it talking to him?
You know, I wrote a piece thinking about we often were in the field together. We went out a lot. Any chance he got to come down, and we would go out. We went in the Red Hills. We went into Splinter Hill. We worked around Tuscaloosa. We were in the Delta a lot. We were in the Florida Panhandle a good bit. And, you know, I was thinking about it. You know, as everybody knows, I'm always pontificating about plants, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm on some great science endeavor. And Ed's always talking about, yes, well, I think this ant is here and not over there for this theoretical reason. But, you know, the truth is, it was like two boys running through the woods just discovering it. Alabama for the first time. I mean, we just had a great time seeing things together and discovering things together, not just because we had that mutual interest.
Yeah, I think about this. Listening to your show on Sunday, and this is, I don't know, this is before the news came out about Ed, but you were talking about the different types of habitats in Alabama, the diversity and what has been lost. I think about that. Kind of let's lump in the voice for that of Ed Wilson being lost as well. But he was. That was his mission, to bring, like you said, attention to our state and what made our state special. And I believe you are the recipient of that baton. You continue that now. Maybe there are more people in the future that are going to know Bill Finch and his work, you know, outside our state, or hopefully they'll know it inside the state. I mean, what is it when you talk about the biodiversity? Can you roll through some stats, the people who don't pay attention to this, why it's important? What's our winning, you know, what are our accolades there? What's our superlatives?
Yeah, you know, I wish I had a full list in front of me, but Alabama is about the size of England. It represents about 1% of the size of the United States. The land area of Alabama is about 1% of the land area of the United States. And yet it is the center of aquatic diversity. It has almost 50% of the nation's fish species. I mean, it's extraordinary to me that a a stream like the Cahaba River in Alabama. Not a big stream. Even the Perdido River, not a big stream. The Paint Rock River. These rivers can have 2 to 3 times the number of fish species of the entire state of California. I mean, it's extraordinary. The 60% of the nation's mussel diversity is in Alabama. It's probably the center of mussel diversity globally, probably the center of snail diversity globally. It's the center of crawfish diversity globally. 100 species of crawfish. My goodness gracious! How in the world do you do that? How do you pack all that in there? It's got. It is. Somebody did a study on turtles, and because. You know, turtles are actually pretty important. They're one of the longest lived of all invertebrate lineages, animal lineages. It extraordinarily, not only have they persisted in time for more than 100 million years, they're also these incredibly long-lived creatures. They live 100, 200 years at times. We need to know more about turtles. I mean, they say something about longevity and about our ability to persist here. And so they say, well, where's the center of turtle diversity? And turns out the center of turtle diversity in the Western Hemisphere isn't the Amazon of South America. It's basically Mobile, Baldwin, and Clark counties.
It's right here in our backyard. Yeah, it is. When we come back for the break, I want to talk more about that, you know, bringing the message of the diversity of our area. Maybe it's the fact that it wasn't a charismatic megafauna that everybody thinks about out west, but maybe some smaller critters that put us on the map. Continue our discussion of the passing and the legacy of E.O. Wilson with Bill Finch right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along and great to talk to my friend Bill Finch. You know, I'm playing gardening for the Gulf Coast here on FM Talk 106.5, but maybe all those years of being the environmental editor and the gardening editor at the Press Register, books like Longleaf, As Far as the Eye Can See, which is, it is interesting that for me, having known about, I guess, the brand, to throw a better, I don't know if that's the best term, the brand of E.O. Wilson in the mix, it was reading that forward in your book that really sent me off on a kind of an academic search about this man and made me proud.
Yeah. So it's just an extraordinary thing that that we have Ed Wilson from Alabama. I think it's good to understand that Ed Wilson would not be what he was, I think, in many ways, had it not been for Alabama and its influence on him. And what influenced him was that incredible biodiversity. It is diversity in Alabama, which it will seem odd to a lot of folks inside and outside Alabama that that the idea of diversity, that the idea of species diversity, that the idea of biodiversity, that the concept of diversity was hatched.
Yeah.
I want to say was born in Alabama, a place that isn't always known for recognizing its diversity. But it was. And I think there's a connection. I think there's even a connection with the fact that we sometimes fail to recognize it, that that made Ed realize, wow, we got to do something about this.
Do you think it's one of the reasons it was lost on the state is it didn't involve charismatic megafauna, right? I mean, because that's pretty much gone by the time we start looking at it. It's smaller critters.
Well, if charismatic megafauna includes Mercedes, Toyota, and Airbus, yes.
But there are no elk. There were no, you know, there were at that point very few bears. Bears come back some,
right,
but
right.
I mean, it was different.
I got to say, and it's always important because, and you've heard me say it too. To understand Alabama, you have to understand that megafauna that was here. I mean, we were the center of a great savanna, a great Serengeti, with diversity here that was probably exceeded what you see now on the African savannas. People wiped that out when they came to Alabama, as they did for much of North America. But we still had elk. We still had, when even in recent centuries, when Europeans came, and we still had elk. That's why we have the Elk River in North Alabama. We still had bison. There's plenty of evidence of bison in Alabama. We are getting our bear back in a big way.
But that, and we're up against a break, but I'm going to come back. But that's that diversity for us. You mentioned it. It comes in crawfish. It comes in mussel species. It comes in turtles and those kind of things that give us this place on the map. Coming right back, more of our discussion of the passing and the legacy of Ed Wilson with Bill Finch right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, Ted, welcome back. Continuing our discussion of the legacy of Ed Wilson, E.O. Wilson, passing away 92. And one of those, Bill, you said it best, a man that was internationally famous, probably way more internationally famous than maybe he was here in our home state. And It's a shame. But I'm looking at the text line. A lot of people do know about him, are familiar with him. Don asks here, Bill, did Mr. Wilson ever discuss crazy ants with you? He said, I don't know if you've ever seen them, but it's incredible how many of them are in a single colony. What were your ant conversations with Ed Wilson?
Yeah, so one thing I can say is he certainly saw ants crazier than crazy ants in his long career. And so I don't know that we would be impressed, perhaps, with crazy ants. We certainly are, because they really do have a lot of ants in a colony. But some of the feats of ants that Ed saw and has written about are really extraordinary. Ed always said, there are many reasons why I think Ed chose ants, and I think it had to do with perhaps his eyesight and certainly the fact that Alabama was a hotbed of ants, and we certainly had this new species coming in that was attracting a lot of attention. But Ed also realized, ants are one of those species that occur virtually everywhere in the world. If you're going to understand the world, you needed to understand ants. And he thought it was a really great entry point. But he is, there's some extraordinary things about ants. The stories he told were about how sort of the history of Alabama through ants and the history of the Caribbean through ants. So he's sort of famous for looking at ant invasions and how they affected politics and economies. And as they moved through the Caribbean, there was a famous episode in the Caribbean that affected Haiti and a lot of other places. It may have even played a role, who knows, in the revolution in Haiti. You could see it coming. But there was an invasion of ants. It just basically made it for a while this huge explosion of ants, and I think it was I don't remember which one of the Fidelis, but it was so big that it basically made farming for a year or two just incredibly difficult, made living miserable, broke down the economic system. And he traced that invasion as it moved through the Caribbean and into the U.S., and then he watched the invaders invade the invaders as one ring of fire ants came in and went to another. But ants were a way for him to understand inheritance.
Meaning what?
Well, it's a really curious thing. I think I can mention Darwin. I'm going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we had this idea that that things evolve, and certainly I see it. I see it happening all the time. Things get better at adapting to life in certain places. Some things don't adapt as well, and they disappear. Things get eaten up by viruses and other things, and they don't persist, and other things figure out a way to work around those viruses, and they do survive. There's this constant thing going on. But the question is, what makes species? How do species form? And how do they evolve precisely? And there's a big argument that is actually almost a religious argument about whether that whether genetics, whether genes, chromosomes, for example, are strands of DNA, are basically driving evolution, or whether that's something that happens at a slightly bigger level. And ants are a great way of studying that, because if ants evolve, they evolve essentially as a colony, not as individuals, if you see what I'm saying.
Plus,
and they
you get
operate
a lot of,
as a colony.
You get a lot of generations pretty quickly, too, with them.
Yes, you can. You certainly can. And that's true for all insects, but ants were particularly sticky problem.
Bill, in his writing, some of the more controversial things, he took his study of ants and relayed that to human beings. You were talking about nature versus nurture and all that. That was a part that back in the 70s got him pushed back. I think I was reading a story, the members of the, what was it, the Marxist Progressive Labor Party came at him back in 78, throwing water on him. They were mad.
Yeah, you know, we don't like people sharing ideas we don't want to hear, and that's always a human failing. It's been a human failing for a long time. We don't, and we, you know, we don't like hearing ideas that have really terrible implications as well. Ed was saying, Ed in his early work on sociobiology was dealing with this old problem. He actually changed his mind late in life, which would have modified a whole lot of things. But he was trying to deal with the ancient problem of nature versus nurture. I guess you might have heard of that. Somebody yammer about that before. Is what we are the product of our genes? Is it the product of nurture? And how much can genes overcome nurture? Some people might argue that there's another factor in there as well, but who knows? Nature versus nurture. Ed was making a very good case that we had underestimated the degree to which genes play a role in what everything is, and particularly humans. So it's and that in understanding those genes and in understanding how those genes might have evolved, we would be better able to be a human being. Not that we would be determined by those genes, but that in understanding that, we would have a better sense of it. That we could modify, in a sense, the history of our genes, the trend of our genes, the disposition of our genes, the biases of our genes. And I think that's what sociobiology was meant to do. If Ed had written that book later in life, if it would have been quite the same. But I do know that it was certainly misrepresented greatly when he wrote it. A lot of people never read it and never really understood it. And I still see that in a lot of the comments surrounding his obituaries, that they really do fail to understand what sociobiology was trying to do.
What's amazing to me about this, Bill, is this is the 70s before the mapping of the human genome. You know, this when that comes in, that he was doing this by just doing the hard science and thinking about it without the benefit of here's the huge leap in science showing these things in the
right.
Genetics, whether they be humans or bison or you know, whatever critter you're talking about.
Yeah, well, Watson Crick and the lady who helped him, who is always ignored, and I can't remember her name right now, unfortunately, because I'm a product of that. But it's they developed, they sort of broke that DNA code for the first time at Harvard while Ed was there, and there was a rivalry because they certainly were these guys were providing information that was useful to Ed, and Ed was providing information that was useful to them, but they thought that the study of species was no longer important. It didn't matter what it was. It didn't matter. We didn't need to go out and identify elephants. All we needed to do was identify DNA. And in fact, that's still going on. We still have a we still have a large part of the science community that really has given up on the tangible world. They only see the world through microscopes. And this was one of Ed's last great battles, was to get people to see the world as it actually was, and not just through microscopes, which are important. But you know, what help is it if you know what an oak DNA looks like if you can't go out in the field and tell one oak from another, or an oak from a hickory? And a lot of modern scientists who study life and who may even study trees can't do that.
We need to figure out a way to solve that, to take you know, people out of those academic settings and maybe let them walk around with Bill Finch, or if we could bring, I'm sure, you know, my grandfather back to Earth, that I walked at his knee and learned, and your family the same way. We could, they could have that. I love the idea of both things, right? You got a pistol on each side, man. You've got the science, you've got the genetics. At the same time, you're a person of the woods and can identify critters and trees.
Right. And it's a system. It's understanding that it's how the DNA comes together in systems that's most interesting, and to see that, you have to see it working in real life. It's, you know, we're working on this big project up in Paint Rock where we're taking 150 acres and trying to understand everything that goes on in that 150 acres in minute detail. We've got every stem. I mean, anything bigger than a pencil, we have it mapped out, we have it studied, we have it identified, we got it on a computer base.
But there's things you tell
folks.
We can
see how these things interact.
Tell, and what y'all are basically getting into is Bill and I's conversations riding down the road, too. But tell folks that even you, when y'all started on that property up there, there were species that you didn't immediately know or recognize, or maybe they hadn't even been charted yet.
Oh, I'm a dummy. I'm a complete dummy.
Yeah.
There's so many things I don't know. And I know that every day. And some of these species I can't identify. But we're finding new species of oaks. We're finding new species of dogwood. I mean, not just new to us. I mean, new to everybody, new to science. And we're having to give them names. And it's one of the, I think it says something about how we don't look hard enough in Alabama. I think it's partly about that, but it's also about the incredible diversity of life here. And it just goes on and on. I mean, dogwoods, violets, azaleas, maples, oaks, all new taxa that we're working on, that we're going to have to name. And it's just extraordinary. But we're discovering it all the time.
All right, we come back from the break. I want to talk about what's next, how we carry on that legacy of Ed Wilson, and then probably, Bill, I'll throw a tomato question at you as well, okay?
Yeah.
Coming right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along. And good to talk to my friend Bill Finch. Of course, you catch him here on Sundays playing Gardening for the Gulf Coast, plus the very popular podcast. You can get the show anytime by going to our app and hitting the podcast link, or going to the podcast page on our website, or going to iTunes or Stitcher, or pretty much anywhere podcasts are served. Catch the show. Bill, let's talk about this as we wind up this hour and the legacy of Ed Wilson. What do we do going forward? I mean, you're doing that work, but what do regular folks do going forward to keep pushing this idea of the diversity and what makes Alabama so very, very special? And I'm not just being a homer, right? Science backs me up.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it is extraordinary in so many different ways. And you wanted to suggest that we didn't have charismatic megafauna.
Uh-huh.
You tell those fishermen out there that they don't have charismatic megafauna.
That's
on
true.
On the end of their hook.
I agree.
There's some really good ones out there, like the Alabama sturgeon and the Gulf sturgeon, and just giant things, big things. We are one of the world's great centers of aquatic diversity. You know, I think Ed would be so disappointed if I was the only one talking about this. It certainly, his idea was that Alabama's future, that it's that the thing it had to sell to the world, the thing that it had to promote to the world, the thing that nobody could take away from Alabama was its biodiversity. And it's something that we've never thought about when we started making plans for what do we do with this state? You know, how are we going to make a living here? How am I going to make a living? I got to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
I got to buy a car. I got to buy a house. How are we going to manage that? And so we always look outside the state for those kinds of solutions. But the reality is that the land, the place, the biodiversity of that land can play a big role, I think, in determining how well we do in the future and in the things we promote. And we're certainly doing that on the ground in many places. I think that you have to think about it. You got to think about it. I mean, we said, oh, let's plant cotton everywhere. Let's go to wherever cotton came from. We don't know. Mexico, wherever. Let's get some cotton. Europe wants us to plant cotton. Europe will buy it for cheap. Let's plant cotton all over the state. Let's make this state famous for cotton. Well, it didn't work out that well. It kind of collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
And all of our solutions are that way. We're always looking for outside. I'm going to get, I offended people first part of the hour. I offended the second part of the hour by saying, oh, let's get some hemp. That'll save the state.
Don't listen to that. Yeah, and I know you did whole shows, and we'll run out of time, but all the people that and we have the interviews, and Rick Pate, the ag commissioner, on here, and we talk about those processes, but this is not where, not saying people can't do it, but this is not where hemp wants to grow, right? This is not its...
Right, right. Yeah. Afghanistan, basically. And we're not Afghanistan. So it's very interesting. We don't think about our biodiversity when we think about how do we look at future of Alabama, and I think there are a lot of things there. I'd love to talk about them specifically, but we only have time for me to say Alabama's most important asset is the one thing we never think about when we're thinking about our future,
and that is our biodiversity.
And you know, it's what other people in if Alabama becomes known in this century for something other than what it was known for in the last century, it will be because of biodiversity. And I think Ed's paved that way. Ed has said Alabama so much outside of Alabama, mm-hmm, that people now are gradually beginning to see that Alabama is more than what it was in the 20th century, more than what it was in the 19th century, more than the tragedies and the oppression and the other problems that we had. That's how people associate it. That's what people say when you talk to the rest of the world about Alabama. That's what they see. But Ed has now said Alabama so much in the context of biodiversity, people are finally beginning to realize, goodness gracious, how did we miss this? How did we miss this? What can we do about it? And I think that's going to depend on what Alabama decides it's going to do about it. And I think if those two things converge, I think if the people of Alabama recognize their biodiversity as the world recognizes it, I think we got a great future.
Indeed. Indeed. Well said. Bill, before, and I know you'll be talking about this on what will be, I guess, that front's coming through on Sunday, so for plain gardening, but now... got a little bit of cold back in the forecast you talked about last week, talking to the old farmer, and I trust old farmers like I do meteorologists, both. I like both. The cold's coming. I was still eating tomatoes out on my back porch a week ago from my cherry tomatoes. I took some cuttings and rooted those. I guess I'm, is that too early, or am I going to be on pace here for putting tomatoes out? When should I be thinking?
No, you're way too early for tomatoes, but it's not too early to start tomatoes. I'd give it another week or two to start tomatoes. I don't know if I would try to overwinter a cutting, because it probably will harbor disease in a pretty serious way, and it's just probably better to start over fresh. I will say that with this cold spell coming in, it's like winter starting over again. It's like winter never happened.
Yeah.
Because we've had such a long warm time that nothing will now be ready for this cold. So So just watch it carefully. A temperature of 28 degrees, which it, you know, you're liable to see in the upper part of our listener area, that could be pretty damaging, more damaging than you would expect, simply because things aren't ready for it.
For sure. There's buds. Listen, that Japanese magnolia in my yard, it's got buds on
it.
It's got buds on it.
Yeah, so. It's Japanese magnolias always have a hard time figuring out where they are. and it's...
not Japan.
Yes. Yeah. They're going to get blasted.
All right. Bill, I appreciate this conversation. I want to remind folks, too, you know, so many books we're talking about, you know, I don't know how many, at least probably 10 books by Ed Wilson out there people could go pick up.
Oh, goodness gracious. You shouldn't have asked. At least 10. No, there's more than 10.
I'm looking at
there's all kind of publications. It's extraordinary.
And by the way, too, if y'all want a fantastic book that, you know, maybe doesn't dive into the sciences deeply, but has beautiful pictures of where we live, Why We Are Here, that book has been out, I don't know, five or 6 years. I got my copy sitting right here in the studio as we got started with this discussion. That's out there. People can pick up. And remind folks who have not picked up a copy, which I shame on them, for the calls you get about Longleaf during your show. Longleaf, as far as the eye can see, who's got the book? Where can people get that?
Yeah, it's a University of North Carolina Press. You can get it from Amazon. You can get all those kinds of things from Amazon. They still sell it. It's now in its third or fourth printing, so it's doing well. Somebody must like it. It's still out there, and it's look at my wife's pictures. You don't have to read my stuff.
Yeah, she's pretty awesome. It's good that she tows you along.
Pictures are incredible.
They are. I'm not going to get into the conversation, but tell the missus I said hello. I like her work. Okay, a little bit better than yours. Okay, you won't hold that against me, right?
Thanks, Sean.
Yeah. I'd like to start that trouble. And I heard you just at least tease the idea that you would be working on a new book right now, or maybe something in the works. Is that, am I stepping on feet here?
Yeah, I've got several things in the works. We all do. I have a contract on one book. That is another book on Longleaf, and we're working on that one. I think it'll be a year or two before that one's ready to go.
Okay.
I've got some other things that I hope will get published even sooner.
Bill, as always, man, I love our talks. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Sean. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Bill Finch, Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast, and our discussion of E.O. Wilson. Be right back.